coming. It's a forward-looking information.
There are other issues as well.
Things started to go wrong.
Promote dialogue.
Probably typical of a lot of organizations.
Continue with process improvements.
Subject matter experts.
Do I do this? Do I do that? It was a challenge, but at the end, we felt pretty good.
The results so far are very promising.
The mayor and his staff actually gave us a round of applause.
Hi there, and welcome to BI Radio. I'm Ken Seeley. On the show today, Tales from the Trenches. We send our producers to Cognos Forum to hear firsthand about the different roads companies take to performance management and the lessons they learn along the way. From Washington, D.C., there's a story of an 8-year journey from Access databases to executive dashboards. From Australia's top-ranked university, talk of balanced scorecards and BI cadets. But we begin in Chicago with the story of forecast accuracy and investor opinion. Delaney Turner learns from Deloitte and Baxter why that connection is so important and why not having one led the life science leader in a new direction.
I'm here with Lisa Feirstein, who is the Director of Global Finance at Baxter Healthcare, and John Wallace, who's a Senior Manager in the Performance Management Group at Deloitte. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. I'd like to start off with a question. John, you presented some statistics about CIOs or finance executives' priorities. Forecast accuracy seems to be the most important capability in building trust with the financial community, yet it's the capability that CEOs and financial executives are the least happy with. What information aren't they getting from their systems?
Well, you know, at the end of the day, what it comes down to is financial executives are under a lot of pressure to deliver accurate results to the market and to understand what's coming. It's the forward-looking information. The executives seem to have a pretty good handle on how they get the historic information right. It's that forward-looking stuff, and how do they do that? Mm-hmm. Right now, most of their information is based on a lot of spreadsheets and hearsay and all kinds of different pieces of information that aren't being brought together into a concise piece of information. So it's not entirely unusual for a senior executive to be sitting on the phone with the executives, paging through multiple different iterations of financial statements trying to get the one they want. Mm-hmm. It doesn't help build confidence, does it?
Mm-hmm. No. Right? No. Now, Lisa, was that the case at Baxter? You talk about forecast accuracy being sort of the spark for this whole project. What could you tell us about the situation at Baxter?
Yes, absolutely. That was the case at Baxter. We had suffered a couple of years in a row of disappointing Wall Street. As a result, we actually have a new CEO. Mm-hmm. His name is Bob Parkinson, and he joined us in 2004. His task by the board was to embark on, in essence, a turnaround process, and he's broken it into two phases. The first phase was approximately 3 years, and its main issue was to A, restore investor credibility, and B, start us on the path of working towards forecast accuracy so that we don't continue to disappoint Wall Street. Mm-hmm. We have brand new management in place, etc. We are now into phase two of his turnaround, and what he is looking to do is continue with process improvements, but also continue on this path of forecast accuracy, specifically in our R&D area, which mm-hmm. is much more complex, so that we are able to significantly bump up our investment in R&D.
Mm-hmm. So if we could go just one step further, how would an inaccurate forecast lead to perhaps poor results or not deliver the right results that the company and that the investment community is looking for?
Well, you know, one of the fundamental problems that a lot of organizations fall into, and Baxter is one of them, is that when they try to manage forecast accuracy, they take a look at the number that's been presented to the street and they manage that number.
Mm-hmm.
And it's through a top-down process they manage that number. In the R&D world, the problem with that is that you don't get to the tangible issue, right? When you're investing money in R&D, it's to get a result, which may not end up on your financial statements this year.
Right.
Exactly.
So what's happening is they're managing the dollars down potentially, but they're not actually achieving milestones. But that piece of information doesn't get out to the financial
right.
community
mm-hmm.
for
right.
months later. Right. Well, years later, quite frankly.
Yeah, right. Yeah, because most typical research projects span much longer than a calendar year.
Right.
Yeah.
So you've gone through what you've called the phase one, which is improving forecast accuracy. Can we say that has been achieved?
Well, I think at the end of the day,
it's
a journey, right?
Yes.
Right.
Number one, phase one of the project, which was a 12-week engagement, mm-hmm. or a 12-month project, mm-hmm. or a 12-week project,
12
and
weeks.
Making a lot longer than it was, really was around supporting a budget process.
Okay.
But we didn't get there because we wanted to support the budget process.
Right, exactly. So how we started out was knowing that we had our budget right in front of us, and we scoped this quite narrowly and focused primarily on what was in our own backyard. Headquarters is in northern Illinois. Mm-hmm. So we have some units that have their budget in there. Why we can't yet say it's successful is because now, as we're into the year 2007, we're into what I call phase two. We now can bump those units' actuals and forecast up against that budget and mm-hmm. begin to actually measure where we're at. So we're just in the process of gathering those metrics.
The one thing we've liked to say all along is, you know, this is not just click the switch and bang, there it is. This is something that's going to take time to institutionalize at Baxter,
yes. mm-hmm.
to get people on board, and quite frankly, to teach management, now they've got all this great information that they've never had access to before, mm-hmm. what do I do with it now? And that's what phase two is about, is helping them understand what to do with it now.
Right. Yeah. That's interesting to say that, because one of the things I found interesting in your presentation materials was that you say the biggest challenge was the people and the process is not necessarily the technology.
Yeah.
I was wondering, what kind of challenges were you looking at? Was it skills? Was it the organizational structure? Was it new learnings? What were the challenges there?
Yes,
exactly. All of the above. What the challenge was and how this whole project started out is I was asked to determine, why are we encountering difficulties to accurately forecast our R&D projects and mm-hmm. what's stopping us? And determined that a lot of it is that our forecasts and our budgets in our organization tend to be driven by the finance organization.
Mm-hmm.
Yet in the research and development world, it's your project managers and your technical community who actually own the projects and know what's happening. And we hadn't invited them to the party.
Okay.
So this was an opportunity for them to begin to participate in the overall process
mm-hmm.
and to actually, we envisioned this as a tool set for them to use to actually promote dialogue across mm-hmm. the organization, in that there's many service areas that they're dependent on mm-hmm. to manage their milestones and work on their projects.
What's interesting about the R&D organization at Baxter, which, you know, what Lisa's just commented on is probably typical of a lot of organizations that are starting to grow. You know,
mm-hmm.
finance drives the budget, and it's only out of the sheer generosity of the business people's hearts that they help with it.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And so, obviously, that doesn't make a lot of sense, because the people closest to the business are the ones that really can provide the best
mm-hmm.
information. What's different about the Baxter R&D organization, it's a matrix organization,
mm-hmm.
right? So that means you've got people consuming resources, and you've got people who actually own those resources,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
they need to talk,
right?
And if you look at the fundamental thing, this project, if we're judged on one thing at the end of the day, it's, are those people talking effectively?
Are they talking?
Because
mm-hmm.
if they're talking effectively, we'll get to forecast accuracy some way,
right? Mm-hmm.
Right. If they aren't talking, it doesn't matter how good everything else is, it ain't going to work.
Right. You can hear the rest of my interview with Lisa and John in the pharmaceuticals section of the Cognos website. In the second half, you'll hear about the importance of communication, building a business case, and the response from executives when the project was rolled out. To access the file, visit cognos.com/solutions. And click on Pharmaceuticals and Life Sciences in the category marked Industry.
Are you a performance manager? Learn how to be one with The Performance Manager, the latest business book from Cognos, PMSI, and BI International. The Performance Manager explores the key challenges in core business functions, sales, marketing, finance, product development, and HR, and describes proven ways you can improve performance in each using sweet spots of information. Become a Performance Manager today. Order your free copy of the book online at www.cognos.com/pmbook. That's cognos.com/pmbook.
You're listening to BI Radio, brought to you by Cognos. the next level of performance. Check us out online at radiocognos.com.
Welcome back. Up next, better business intelligence between the mountains and the sea. John Blackmore talks balanced scorecards and BI cadets with Chris Grange from the University of Wollongong in Australia. Let's listen in.
I'm speaking with Chris Grange, Vice Principal of Administration at the University of Wollongong. Chris, your university is big, over 20,000 students, and I understand it's an award-winning institution.
Yes, we've won a number of awards. We're the number one teaching university in Australia, according to all government statistics that come out. We're also one of the top 10 research universities in Australia. And last year, the Commonwealth Universities, that's the British Commonwealth, named us as the University of the Year, and that's across the whole of the British Commonwealth. Wollongong's about 1 hour south of Sydney. Wollongong, as a name, means... it's an Aboriginal word, and it means between the mountains and the sea.
Now, you had a successful business intelligence and reporting implementation at your university, but things started to go wrong. Maybe you could talk about that.
We managed to build content that covered every area of our activity, but it actually started to work against us. The first reason was the sheer volume of content that we collected became too big and too confusing for all of our end users. The second thing was that architecturally it became too complex to support, and the amount of time that we had to put into supporting all of these disparate cubes and reports became quite difficult. There are other issues as well. It's really hard to recruit and retain well-qualified BI professionals. And every time we lost a key person, our momentum and our end-user relationships would be set back.
Now, your solution that you're alluding to, I believe, is to reorganize on many levels. One really interesting part was on the business structure. You established a unique form of a balanced scorecard. Maybe you could tell us a bit about that.
We're actually using the balanced scorecard model in much of our business planning already, but we had to customize it in a couple of respects. You know, the in our environment, the two main customer-facing activities that we have are teaching and research. So we basically took that segment of the balanced scorecard and broke it off into two subsections. We also had a strong desire from our community engagement folks to add community engagement in as a separate dimension within our scorecard as well.
I think there's six of them.
So the six perspectives would then be students and teaching, research, community engagement, finance, leadership and growth or people, and business process.
And a balanced scorecard then is a collection of metrics around those areas. Maybe you just give us a flavor for a few metrics from one or two of those areas, maybe.
Sure. Let's talk about the research for a start. So the amount that our faculty publish is a key research metric.
Okay.
The amount of research funding that they win competitively is a key research metric. The number of postgraduate research students that they recruit and that we train is a key research metric. So they're three of the most important research metrics, and we're tracking those. So the principle we've adopted is that every key metric has to be a ratio or percentage-based performance measure so that scale is taken into account, and that also allows us to do internal and external benchmarking and comparisons with on a like-for-like basis.
When you're talking about the the balanced scorecard approach working through the organization, I believe it also affected your own BI organization in terms of the way that you organized its structure.
I mean, we wanted to come up with a structure that was more robust and more better able to withstand the kinds of risks that you face of losing good people, and gave us a stronger consistency over a period of time. The final structure is something of an amalgamation, but the major emphasis is on subject matter experts. There's a project director, there are four business analysts, there are two technical analysts, and there are four what we've called business intelligence cadets.
And you mentioned the BI cadets. What part of the solution for you was that?
What we did was we recognised, one, that there was a labour shortage for qualified BI people, and two, that we had an inherent advantage as a university because we produce a large number of IT graduates every year. So we thought, well, we'll put the two of those together. And what we'll do is that we'll create these BI cadetships. We'll look to recruit graduating students on a two-year cadetship. We'll ask that they have a basic understanding of SQL and OLAP, and we'll pay them a good salary, but what we'll give them is lots of training. They'll start and they'll automatically be booked into three or four training programs, and we'll teach them how to build cubes, how to build reports, how to build metrics, how to contribute to the data warehouse design and development, and so on and so forth.
It's a clever idea, a clever approach to what you had as a problem.
The results so far are very promising. So we've had this team together now for 8 months, and they've evaluated Cognos 8.1. They've had that in development for some time. They've created a new data warehouse structure. They have finalized the specifications for all of the HR metrics and indicators, and they've built all of the HR metrics and indicators. They've written the first draft specifications on research, on students and teaching, and on finance, and they're out with the end users for comment at the moment. They've ordered their new server infrastructure and worked with our IT group to put all that in place, and they're actually installing Cognos 8.2 this week in the production environment, and we'll be starting to roll out some of the new content and models over the next few weeks. I think the BI cadets model is extremely repeatable for universities. I think it's repeatable for other employers more widely, but for universities in particular, it leverages on their ability to access a prospective labour market really well.
That's great. Well, I really appreciate your time today. It's a great approach to what could have been a problem. You've turned a challenge into opportunities. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Need answers to your business questions now? Get them with Cognos Now, the industry's first operational business intelligence appliance. Cognos Now gives you real-time and continuous visibility into your key business processes through dashboards that users can set up and edit themselves. See a demo at cognos.com/products/now and see the difference that quick decisions can make on business performance. That's cognos.com/products/now.
You're listening to BI Radio. Check us out online at radiocognos.com.
Welcome back to BI Radio. I'm Ken Seeley. Our last tale from the trenches comes from Washington, D.C., where Kelsey Howarth talks to John Nitz. He's the president of Gentech LLC. He was the former director of Information Systems and Operations in the District of Columbia Office of Budgeting and Planning. His story about executive dashboards is 8 years in the making. And, as you'll hear, it ends with a round of applause.
First off, I'd like to talk about your experience with the Office of Budgeting and Planning. Could you tell us what the pains were?
Actually, I started with budget and planning about 8.5 years ago. As their information systems director. when we started, the office was still kind of in a non-technical state. It was learning about technology. They were doing a lot of things on spreadsheets and actually using copiers to make copies of pages to put in, to publish for their budget books. So when I came on board, I found out right away it was going to be a large challenge to try to get them not just, you know, to the current state, but maybe out of the dark ages as they kind of were in at that point. So it was basically when I came in, I was looking at what was going on, how they were doing business, and finding places where we could automate. It started with things as simple as access databases, data that they would collect on spreadsheets or handwrite. We looked at that information, saw how the information was structured, and created simple databases so that they could begin sharing information, which they were not able to in the past. And not just sharing information, but sharing information real time. Not emails, not handing out a piece of paper, but interacting through a database real time so that they could get their work done quickly, more efficiently, quickly, and in some cases actually, you know, more accurately. So that was kind of the beginning. Over time, we've done things as in relations to bringing those automations to a new level. Bringing in tools such as Cognos PowerPlay, Impromptu, IWR, Impromptu Web Reports, and just recently in the last couple of years, ReportNet, and then hopefully here in the near future, Cognos 8. We've realized that, you know, though Access is a very nice tool to use, it's not the proper tool if you're going to work on an enterprise level. We realized that a while back, and we've begun that process. So part of our accomplishments have been, as I think I've spoken in years past, is the executive dashboard that we built for the CFO's office, and it has also rolled into the mayor's office and the city council. That application, its base foundation is Cognos. It's a data warehouse pulled by Cognos using Cognos PowerPlay, Cognos using the Impromptu Web Reports and other various Cognos tools to put in front of our executives a view of their government in a very quick and accurate fashion, very intuitive, quick to use, easy to understand, and able to and provides them the ability to make those decisions they need to make quickly.
In terms of benefits, you've mentioned a few already, but are there any in terms of time or costs that really stand out?
When people see the dashboard, yes, they see something that's very unique to the district, but what they don't see is that it's kind of like a lot of your back office tools. You don't see that stuff up front, you only see the pretty picture in the window, but you don't realize all the hard work going on in the background. And that's what Cognos is doing. That's what their tools do, is they do all that work, they pull all that information together, they take all the information, help it through our standardization, through our BI standardization work, taking all this information, relating it, normalizing it, and just letting the system continually pull that together. So every day when they go in, they know they're getting up-to-date information, they're getting it quickly, they know it's right, they know it's been reconciled. They don't have to think about that. They just have to react. Do I do this? Do I do that? Do I up this program? Do I decrease the funds in this program? Do I need to call this director to find out why their performance isn't at the level that they had promised or they said they were able to achieve? That's where we needed to get them at, and we were finally able to do that. So it was a challenge, but at the end we felt pretty good about being able to do that. In fact, I always tell people showed me that we were at a point that this had become successful is when we demoed this for the mayor's cabinet And after the demo, the mayor and his staff actually gave us a round of applause at a staff meeting. And that just is not something that happens. Time-wise, I don't know if I could even describe it. I mean, to tell you that the mayor, the council, stakeholders in general are getting information within seconds that it used to take hours, days, and weeks to get. I don't know. It's hard. How do you describe that? Except that it's huge. Cost wise, that's a little bit more difficult. People have asked us this question, and there's two reasons why it's hard. One, government. You hear about government as it relates to benefits. Benefits realization, saving money. And government, it's hard. I truly believe it's hard because, governments aren't meant to save money. I mean, governments are meant to provide services. So if you're saving money, you're not providing services. Now, can you reallocate your monies better so that the right services are getting the adequate amounts of dollars? Yeah. Does using Cognos, does using this dashboard help allocate those monies to the right services? That I can say yes. But to say that it's a dollar amount of savings, I really try to stay away from that because I really think that, at the end of the day, if you're not providing adequate services, then the amount of money you save really doesn't matter.
Are you envisioning the mayor having Cognos 8 on his mobile?
I think it's really going to be more timing than anything else. I want to say more maybe a when than an if. And like I said, once things get rolling into bringing Cognos 8 on board, it'll be interesting to see. It'll be very interesting to see. One of the things that the mayor has done is he's very much patterned the way he operates as similar to what Mayor Bloomberg does in New York, the bullpen format and all that. So he's very much about interactive, sharing information, dialogue, bringing great ideas to the table and making sure that information is shared immediately with others. So it could very well be. I mean, Cognos is going to be a mainstay at the district. I don't see anything coming in and replacing Cognos as the tool of choice. We've looked at groups like Hyperion and Business Objects, and they just haven't provided the full gamut of tools and opportunities that Cognos has, and why switch to something when we're winning with what we got?
For more information on the Office of Budgeting and Planning's journey to better performance, please visit the customer section of Cognos.com. For more information on how John's company can help an organization like yours, please email him at gentech. That's J-E-N Tech LLC at Verizon.net.
If you're in the middle of a Cognos deployment, here's something you should know. You can get it right the first time with the help of Cognos Guardian Services. Cognos Guardian Services provides certified and experienced consultants who collaborate with your project team for a successful implementation. Get proactive help at critical checkpoints and take advantage of our deep technical expertise throughout your project. You'll get the benefit of a multi-party engagement and a commitment from us to ensuring your success. Find out more at support.cognos.com. That's support.cognos.com.
Taking you to the next level of performance. This is Radio Cognos. Check us out online at radiocognos.com.
Well, that makes it a wrap for another episode of BI Radio. I'd like to thank our guests. From Baxter, Lisa Feuerstein. From Deloitte, John Wallace. From the University of Wollongong, Chris Grange. From Washington, D.C., John Nitz. Thanks as well to contributing producers John Blackmore, Kelsey Howarth, and Delaney Turner. And finally, I'd like to thank our producer and recording engineer, Derek Schreiner, for composing all the original music you hear on BI Radio and for making us sound so good. A reminder to check us out at radiocognos.com, where you can download any of our shows, read the transcripts, and find additional information about the stories you've heard. If you have a question or care to comment about BI Radio, send us an email at radio@cognos.com. I'm Ken Seeley. Thanks for listening. See you again in 6 weeks.